All Gilded and Golden, written by Black Cat, read by Opal Song. Fandom, Star Wars. Rating, teen. Relationships, Owen Lars, Wolf, and Owen Lars and Luke Skywalker. Also tagged for Alternate Universe, Canon Divergence. Alternate Universe, Merpeople. The Naboo are Merpeople. Family Feels, Fluff, Angst, On the Run, and Fix It of Sorts. Produced for Marianas for ITPE 2023. Can't Criffing believe he sent a Naboo to Criffing Tatooine, Owen says, too loud, but they're in the middle of the wilderness. There's no one who's going to hear him except the Force, and if it does hear him, he hopes it turns around and beats some light-bedamned sense into Obi-Wan Kenobi's skull. In his lap, fully entranced by the corner of the blanket Owen has him bundled in, Luke coos, beams, and flips his tail. The fancy, flowing, colorful fins slap Owen's thigh, and he sighs and tugs the bottom of the wrap down to hide as much as he can. The Queen of Naboo had a pretty memorable tale in her mer form, and Owen's not about to risk someone who knew her noticing that a random orphan has the same pattern of scales and fins that she did. "Kirking idiot," Owen tells Luke, bouncing him on his knee a little. "We have a moisture farm. One counter with the evaporator and you've got a fishtail in the middle of a desert planet. Makes me wonder if there are any Jedi with sense." Luke burbles delightedly when Owen offers him his hand, and Owen can't quite fight a small smile, no matter how much he tries, as his nephew inspects his fingers with intent. Being off Tatooine is a hell of a change, but Beru didn't want to leave, and she'll keep the farm. There are no ties connecting her to the Skywalker family now, so she should be safe enough. And, well, it's Owen's stepbrother who got himself turned backwards and sideways by the war. His nephew, who's apparently half Naboo but needs to be hidden. Luke's not going to be able to control the change for years, and the farm's isolated, but not that isolated. Word of a Naboo kid on Tatooine will spread if they stay, and even if Vader doesn't realize what it means, it still makes Luke a target for whatever slave trader is looking to add something exotic to their wares. Beru's got the farm and her divorce, and she'll be fine. Owen has Luke and a whole galaxy to hide in, and as long as he keeps moving, Luke will be safe. "We've got this, kid," he says, and Luke looks up at him with wide blue eyes and smiles. And Owen smiles back, boosting him up in his arms and covering his bright fins against the cold. For all of Owen's general dislike of the Jedi and his annoyance at Obi-Wan Kenobi in particular, he wouldn't mind a bit of help getting his nephew to stop making things float. Entirely too tired for all of this, Owen snatches one of his boots out of the air and chucks it back into the corner. "Enough of that Jedi nonsense," he tells Luke sternly. But Luke just giggles and flips his tail and reaches for Owen's ancient, heavily battered datapad. It slides across the bed toward him, and Owen catches that too, because it's heavy enough to hurt the kid if he doesn't stop it in time. If the ship's gravity hadn't failed, my life would be 10 times as peaceful, he says to Luke, who took the sight of things floating all around the tiny cabin as an invitation to indulge in Jedi tricks that are probably going to get them both killed. Owen's been trying to get him to stop for 2 days now, and they're going to have to make port eventually. If he does this in public, the fishtail is going to be the least of Owen's worries. At least on the farm, no one would have noticed except the Tuskens, he says, rueful. But they can't go back. Not only would it be too dangerous for Luke, but Owen has just enough credits left to find a room somewhere cheap at their next stop while he works whatever odd jobs he can find. Everyone always needs things fixed, at least, and Owen's not a bad hand at that after years of self-sufficiency on Tatooine, so things aren't dire, but it just feels weird, that's all. Ducking Obi-Wan and leaving Tatooine in secret, leaving Beru to break the news to the Jedi who's been haunting their homestead for months now, venturing out into the galaxy when he's never even taken a step off his homeworld before. It all sits weird, sits wrong. Owen likes to think he's a practical man, though, and he needed to leave, so he did. He needed to get Luke away from the one place he'll stand out like, well, a fish in the desert. If Obi-Wan had bothered to think before he dragged a Naboo to Tatooine, none of them would be in this situation. But he didn't, and they are, so of course Owen's going to fix it as best as he can. With a sigh, he pulls one of Luke's rattles out of the air, hands it back to him. His other boot drops back to the floor with a thump as Luke's attention drifts. And Owen snorts, settling down on the narrow bed beside the kid, and leaning over him as he shakes the thing. "We'll try to make it to Naboo eventually," he promises. "Find someone to show you how to get your human legs back. Midrim flights cost a light-damned arm and a leg, though, so it might take a while. They don't want Outer Rim bastards like us stinking up their ports, I guess." At least ports on the way to the Midrim pay a little more than those in the far edges of the Outer Rim like Tatooine. Tatooine's not even Republic space, technically, but it's in disputed territory where the borders shift enough that it's not impossible to get back into the Republic without papers. And one of Owen's friends from Mos Eisley helped set him up with his first job on a refueling station. Hopping from one port to the next isn't the easiest way to live, especially with a kid, but it could be worse. Once they're on Naboo, well, Owen's gonna have to hope that loyalty to Queen Amidala is still high enough that someone will be able to keep their mouth shut and help them out. Once Luke can control the change, they'll head back to the Outer Rim, as far from the Empire's center of power as they can get. Maybe head for Hutt space, even. Owen's wary of traffickers, because Beru's been in the abolitionist movement on Tatooine since well before he met her, and he's heard far too many horror stories. But Nar Shaddaa is a good place to hide. It's far enough outside the Republic that he might even feel safe sending a message to Obi-Wan, finally figuring out some kind of training for Luke. Waking up to the contents of the room hovering under its own power went a long way towards convincing Owen that maybe training isn't the worst idea, even if it comes with downsides like interacting with a Jedi in general, and Obi-Wan Kenobi specifically. He pulls his water bottle out of the air before it can drop on Luke's head, sighing, and sets it aside. "You're trouble just like your father," he tells Luke, who burbles cheerfully. Owen huffs, hardly able to believe that this kid is the son of a mad dictator's monstrous right hand, but, well, that could probably be worse too. At least he got his mother's temperament to go along with her tail. It seems, sometimes, like the whole galaxy outside of Tatooine is freezing cold. That might be the hardest part to get used to, Owen thinks. He wraps himself up in as many layers as he can afford to spend credits on, keeps close to heaters whenever he can, tries to keep Luke bundled up as much as he'll allow. They're getting close to Luke's first birthday, and he's crawling. Well, not quite crawling, and the Naboo probably have a special word for it, but he's dragging himself around pretty well now, splashing and swimming just a little bit whenever they get in water that's deep enough. It still makes something lurch in Owen's belly, using water for something like that, but everything he's read on the Naboo say it's important they swim as children, and he's trying his best to stick to that. Part of him misses Tatooine. It's home, and Beru is home. But settling down somewhere new for however short a time isn't all bad. A couple of the freed slaves Beru helped de-chip are willing to offer a bit of grace, and Owen finds work at a port under one of them, fixing what needs fixed and pitching in when the loaders get overwhelmed with the cargo. The Twi'lek woman is kind enough to let him haul a baby along with him to work, and Owen keeps his head down, his hands busy, and his plans one step ahead of any possible Imperial agent looking for them. He takes a recommendation from the Twi'lek lady, changes jobs after 2 months on the refueling station. The next job is at a backwater port on Felucia, working for one of the lady's friends. But the imps are everywhere on the planet, and Owen bails after just 3 weeks, takes another recommendation and lands on Nearport 7 for a month before hitching a ride with a friendly Zabrak bounty hunter to the location of her next job. She sets him up with a dubiously legal shipper she knows, and it's decent pay with more unpredictable hours, and Owen can't say he minds the distance from the Empire's eyes. It's hard to be sure if Anakin remembers him, harder to be sure if he'll recognize his own kid at a glance. Vader's a monster from everything Owen's seen and heard, but he met Owen once. Probably has the memory burned into his skull because that's sure as hell how Owen feels about Shmi's death. If Anakin does remember and somehow Owen comes to his attention, it won't be pretty. Not for Luke, certainly. The galaxy's huge and the Outer Rim especially so. The Emperor seems occupied settling all the unrest in the core, but the clone armies are spread all across the galaxy, putting down revolts, removing governments that don't agree with the Senate, tightening the Empire's grip. Odds are that Owen will never encounter his stepbrother again, even if he stays in the Bright Jewel sector for another 1,000 years, but everything feels like a risk with Luke in his care. Everything feels dangerous. Owen's going to try his level best to give Luke a relatively normal life growing up, because the kid deserves that at the very least. But that doesn't change just how much danger he's in just by existing. The smuggler sends him on to another friend when he notices Owen's getting twitchy, and Owen lands on Foray Junction with about an eighth of the credits he needs for a trip to Naboo, an itching bad feeling, and a half-Naboo kid who's just turning one and figuring out how to drench Owen entirely every time he's near more than a drinking amount of water. "Seems to me," Owen tells him, because Luke's the only one he can talk to now for anything outside his time at work, "that we should try to get off this hellhole before something happens." Luke coos at him, flips his tail, smacks Owen in the back of the head. Owen sighs, shifting the sling, even though he knows it won't do much, and rubs a hand over his scruff, trying to figure out what to do next. The port is bustling, loud and obnoxious, and Owen hadn't thought he'd ever miss the hush of Tatooine's vast deserts, but he does, particularly at moments like this. He's got a pile of systems to sort through, a nagging wariness that's probably related to just how many Imperial troopers are on Junction, and 3 weeks at least until he gets paid. Not ideal. "Your grandmother came through here once," he tells Luke, because Shmi had told him about Junction, a child's memories of the bustle and the neon, one bright spot before her ship full of settlers had been taken by pirates, everyone on board sold off as slaves. It makes Owen a little sad, a little tired to be standing here with Shmi's grandson, hiding from her son, trying to figure all of this out on the fly. Shmi always seemed to know what to do, with an innate sense and a strange grace that made it entirely unsurprising to learn her son had gone to be a Jedi. Owen had been in awe of her a little when Kleeg first brought her home. For all he'd had his doubts about his father freeing a woman just to marry her, and for all the unease he'd had about Shmi not having much ability to refuse as she should have, he'll never be unhappy that Shmi came into their lives. With a sigh, he pulls Luke out of the sling, settles him on a tossed-down robe as he gets his tools out. "Guess we're retracing our steps," he says, and Luke burbles, reaches. He hasn't started talking yet, as such, but Owen's not too worried about it. Luke's good at making it clear what he wants, and he's a happy baby, without the crying fits Owen has seen other parents suffering through. Smiling a little, he digs out a ring of hard fruit, hands it over. Luke takes it happily, sucking on it as he flips his tail, and Owen brushes a hand over his sandy hair, tweaks his nose for the loud laugh it gets him. "I think we can get these freight droids back up in a few hours," he says. "Make an early night of it. Gonna let me get some sleep this time?" Luke beams at him, clearly making no promises. And Owen snorts, turns away, and starts unbolting plates. There's a bit of corrupted code that's managed to spread between the droids like a virus and apparently exists just to make Owen's life harder. So he doesn't get the early night he was hoping for. It turns into a late night, even. But Luke falls asleep on Owen's robe, and Owen doesn't particularly want to come in on his free day to finish the problem, so he stays well into the night, rewriting the bad code and trying to pinpoint the damage that it caused, replacing dented casings and torn wires. A handful of his co-workers stick their head into his corner of the bay to say their goodnights as they head out, but after a while, the trickle dies off, and the only sound is the muted, distant hum of the night traffic, confined to the other side of the port. Owen feels like he can breathe easier with the rush gone, and he settles into his work, one eye on Luke, even though the boy isn't stirring. They're going to have to move on soon, he thinks, but not quite yet, maybe. He doesn't know where their next stop is going to be, hasn't managed to connect with enough of the regulars to win an invitation onto a ship. Saving credits is worth the bit of risk in trying to make acquaintances, and Owen would rather find a ship that doesn't need papers and documents, instead of one of the bigger transports. Harder to be traced that way, and leaving a planet like Junction, with plenty of Imperial troops, Owen wants as few witnesses as physically possible, as little evidence as he can manage. He's just finishing up the second-to-last droid, eyes feeling vaguely gritty but hands still steady, when a distant chime sounds. At this point, it's a common enough sound that Owen ignores it, leaving it to the night clerk to help whoever needs assistance, probably in maneuvering around the port or finding an open bay. The Togruta woman who runs the evening staff should be there, though Owen can't remember if he saw her pass through the bay. The chime comes again, then again, and Owen makes a sound of irritation, raising his head as a bolt slips. Luke stirs on his robe, and that's enough to get Owen on his feet. The kid already sleeps less than is probably good for him, and the damn bell is going to wake him up if Owen doesn't put a stop to it. Frowning deeply, Owen grabs for a rag, then heads for the front, wiping his hands as he goes. He's got clearance to do most things, but that hardly means he wants to help whatever bastard thinks just past midnight is a good time to demand assistance. He's expecting a lowlife, some kind of smuggler trying to slip through security while a skeleton crew runs the port. What he walks out into is a squad of clones in white armor, every single one of them heavily armed. For a fraction of a second, Owen almost hesitates. He almost turns around and heads straight back to Luke, ready to grab him up and run. But by the time the thought has even passed through his head, the clone trooper at the head of the squad is already turning, looking at him. There's a gray pauldron on his shoulder, marking him as the leader, and a sharpness to his attention that makes Owen even warier. Still. Owen is not about to flinch. Not when his nephew's safety rests solely on him. He meets that dark visor evenly, carefully scrubbing the worst of the grease off his hands, and says, "Sorry, manager for this section stepped away. Can I help you?" The commander nods, tipping his head at the large crate two of his men have between them, suspended on anti-grav lifts. "We need an empty cargo bay," he says, and Owen can feel the weight of his gaze, an assessing and narrow sweep. Somewhere my men can stand guard that's away from traffic. Something secret, then, or at least important. Owen silently curses his luck, though he doesn't let the annoyance show, and steps around the terminal to check the system. Got one in the western block, he says, carefully not raising his eyes to look at the troopers. There are footsteps behind him, and he doesn't twitch as the commander comes to a stop behind him, looking at the display. Another here, and one here. The commander studies the layout for a moment, then taps one of the empty areas. This hull, what does it connect to? Maintenance, Owen says, flat, and if he has to carry Luke past troopers several times a day, maybe it's better to skip out now, call his next paycheck a loss, and just pay for a flight somewhere else. Your department? The commander asks, just a little sharp. Yes, sir. Owen meets the visor, the hidden eyes behind it, without wavering. We're short-staffed. It's the quietest area right now, if you're trying to avoid the press. The commander grunts. There, then, he says, an order, and Owen nods, checks that he can get the door open with his code, and heads back the way he came. Behind him, the commander says, Comet, boost, check the other halls. Sinker. Got it, commander. One of the troopers takes over the lift, as two more split off, and the commander follows Owen, steps ringing on the decking. Luke's fine, Owen thinks, breathing out. This isn't any different than when Jabba's men come sniffing around the homestead, or the Tuskens get confrontational. They've even had Inquisitors land on Tatooine before, though they stayed in Anchorhead and didn't come to Mos Eisley. Owen's managed to deal with all of those threats. He can take a few troopers on Imperial business. Are the bays airtight? The commander asks, and Owen doesn't look over as a body falls in beside him, bristling with weapons and managing to loom too large in the otherwise empty corridor. Our cargo needs a carbon dioxide heavy atmosphere. Owen snorts. I wouldn't trust the system with something toxic, he says. But supposedly, I can double-check the setup the day after tomorrow if you want. Not now? The commander asks, displeased. Owen's tired. He's been here since early, and it's creeping towards a full rotation spent wholly at work. Luke's asleep, alone, and Owen just wants to go back to his small rented room and collapse face down on the mattress for a while. No, he says, maybe a little too sharp. The system has a security check every night. I can't interrupt it. After a moment, he remembers he's talking to a clone trooper, an Imperial commander, and sets his jaw. Shouldn't piss the man off, probably. I'll come in tomorrow afternoon if you want. This afternoon. There's a moment of silence, then a breath. Wolf, Sinker says, low. That's fine, Wolf allows, annoyed. Focus on the cargo, Sergeant. Yes, sir. Sinker just sounds amused, and Owen casts a look from one to the other, faintly wary, but then decides it's none of his business. He unlocks the bay, then steps in and holds still as the pair of troopers pass him to enter, scanning the space like they're expecting a rebel cell to be hiding inside. Clear, one of the troopers says, and Wolf nods, then waves the cargo forward. Sinker, you and Mortar on first watch, he says, short. Code? Owen shows him the input on the pad, logging the bay as in use and then stepping back. Anything else, sir? He asks, bland. Wolf waves him off. Thanks, he says, already distracted, and heads for the crate without looking back. Owen doesn't want to risk sticking around for anything having to do with imps being secretive. He turns around and makes tracks back to Luke and leaves through the back door. If he's going to be coming into work in a few hours anyway, the last two droids can wait. It feels like Owen barely closes his eyes before an emergency alert is coming through his comm, blaring him unpleasantly awake, with his heartbeat racing. It sounds like the perimeter alarm on the homestead, and Owen spent the years since Shmi's capture and subsequent death dreading the sound coming again. There are no Tuskens, though. No clone troopers coming to tear Luke out of his arms. One of the main fuel systems in the port is down, and they need all hands to come in and fix it. Owen sits on the edge of his bed for a long, long moment, staring at the alert with exhaustion weighing at his bones, and then huffs in disgust and rises to his feet. Luke is still asleep, and he hardly stirs when Owen bundles him up and gets him into the sling. There's a twitch of feathery fins, a curl of chubby fingers, but nothing else. And Owen can't help but smile a little as he straps the sling on and heads out into the rainy morning, every step dragging a little more than it should. By the time they make it to the port, Luke is a little more alert, though Owen feels even more like death walking. He gets his orders, finds his spot in the relay, and sets Luke up near a wall and out of harm's way as he unpacks his tools. Luke's a good kid, even at his age, and he crawls around a bit, squirming like some kind of tiny seal as he tries to navigate between human torso and glittery tail, but he doesn't go far. Both of them are getting used to this kind of thing. Owen keeps half an eye on Luke. Luke entertains himself with a couple of shiny rings on a chain and a doll Beru made him, and the work goes more or less smoothly. Even when he's crawling around and smacking the floor with his tail, Luke sticks close, and Owen is grateful. "Have to get that tail dealt with before you start walking," he says, reaching out and tugging on the tip of one fin to make Luke giggle. "I bet the Naboo have a better way to do this, right, kid?" He hadn't realized Padme was Luke's mother when Obi-Wan had handed the kid over. They'd met, of course, had gotten to know each other, and in the middle of the horror of Luke's first transformation, it was a rush of relief and then regret to realize that the Naboo woman who'd come to be something like a friend was likely his mother. Was dead. Dead in a way that had something to do with Anakin, if Obi-Wan's reticence was anything to go by. And Owen wants to think his stepbrother couldn't have hurt his partner just before she gave birth. But he's realistic. Anakin is Vader. Anakin's done a whole lot worse to a whole lot of other people at this point. Over the day and night it took Anakin to find Shmi and return with her, and then, through Anakin's grief and rage, it was Padme who interacted with the rest of the family the most, helped out and comforted and did what she could. Owen had liked her a hell of a lot, something he hadn't expected when he heard she was a Republic senator. And he'd talked plenty with her as they waited. The Naboo thing had come up, though not in nearly enough detail to be helpful now, and he deeply regrets that he didn't have any real idea what to ask. Instead, he'd admired the scales she showed off to him after pouring a cup of water over her legs, talked with her about the last time she'd been on Tatooine, and left it at that. "Your mom told me that the whole core of her planet's made of water," he tells Luke, most of his attention on the wires he's rerouting. "I guess that's where the fish part comes in. Said the Theed Royal Palace goes 10 levels down into an underground ocean, too. And the lower throne room's underwater. Be nice to see that part." He doesn't have any illusions about the fact that they're going to be able to. At best, he'll be able to dig up someone who won't sell him out to the Empire, but will be able to help Luke change back and forth instead of just being stuck in his Naboo form. Once that's done, well, Owen's not sure what he'll do. Going back to Tatooine seems like a risk, and besides that, Beru's what he would go back for, and their separation was wholly amicable in a way he doesn't want to strain by reappearing years later. Luke's gonna need some kind of training, though, and Owen has no earthly idea how to find any Jedi except Obi-Wan, who's not exactly ideal. He's still too twisted up about Anakin, too caught up in what Luke means, to see what Luke is. Owen's not about to hand his kid over to someone who, even with the best of intentions, will treat him like a tool. It says a lot, Owen thinks, that Obi-Wan's haunting Tatooine and Luke, and completely ignoring the girl who's Luke's twin sister. Obi-Wan's too hung up on the father to see the children, and that goes double for the girl. "You're sweet like your mom," Owen tells Luke, who's watching him with wide blue eyes as he chews on another piece of dried fruit. "I wonder if that means your sister's a whole lot more like your dad. Your grandma told a hell of a lot of stories about the trouble he got into." Luke's sweet, like Shmi, he thinks, But it's still hard to say her name, even years later. Shmi was his stepmother for years, and the light at the center of the homestead and her death, the way she died, no one deserved that, but particularly not her. She would have come if she was still around, he says, a little rough in his throat. It was Shmi who taught him mechanics, tucked away in the garage together while Klieg was working elsewhere. Would have packed up and headed out with us the instant she thought it needed to be done. Bet she'd have a plan to get to Naboo faster than me, too. There's no use dwelling, really. But it's hard not to, sometimes. He misses Shmi, and he wishes that she could have met Luke. And he doesn't have any idea how he's going to keep Luke safe for the rest of his life, the way he needs to. Shmi's lost enough family to slavers or death or whatever the hell Anakin's done to himself. And, well, he and Beru were trying for a kid, but couldn't have one. Luke is theirs, and he's Owen's, and Owen's not going to let a damn thing in the whole galaxy hurt him. Not if he can prevent it. Thankfully, the emergency doesn't take too long to fix, even if it's a pain. And the supervisor gives Owen leave to take the next day off, too, in thanks for coming in. Owen's hitting his second wind, though, and even if he's exhausted, he's more or less up and moving. So he stays a little longer, finishes up the droids from yesterday, and makes it to the Imperial Trooper's cargo bay just as the sun is rising over the port. There's no one present, except for the pair of guards on the door. Different ones than were here a few hours ago. Owen waves his ID at them in a vague way, but he's grease-covered enough that they clearly don't feel inclined to double-check, and when he punches in the code, they let him in without a fuss. At this point, Luke's wide awake, cheerful and a little noisy, and interested in absolutely everything. The only thing that's in the cargo bay is the huge crate the troopers lugged in, so Owen doesn't hesitate to drop Luke on the ground, free to crawl wherever he wants. No nonsense, he tells Luke sternly. But Luke is already up and crawling, squirming forward on his stubby tail and cooing delightedly. Owen snorts in amusement, watching him move for a long moment, and then climbs up the rungs in the wall to get to the airlock system. It's an old model and clearly hasn't been run in a while, so Owen checks tubing, gaskets, seals. There's a leak in one of the conduits that he has to replace, but it's mostly uninteresting enough work, and quiet. Owen focuses on the systems, letting tension unwind from his spine until he's the closest to relaxed he gets, and Luke thumps his hands against the crate, laughing. Hey, Owen says sternly, pulling his head out of the unit to look around. No hitting, Luke, and definitely don't hit imp equipment. Luke laughs again, clapping his hands. He seems entranced by the crate, though Owen can't see anything special about it. And Owen frowns. Luke, he warns. But Owen thumps the side of the crate again, a persistent and oddly noisy series of bangs. He makes a delighted sound, almost overbalancing, and Owen sighs, drops off the ladder, and goes to pick him up. Hey, he says, and scoops the kid up in an exaggerated motion, tucking him under one arm as he squeals and squirms delightedly. None of that now. We damaged something, and the Empire's definitely gonna notice. And then you'll be in real trouble, kid. Doesn't seem like your dad's the type to win the galaxy's best father, and I don't want you getting handed back to him, you hear me? Luke coos and shoves his fist in his mouth. Owen sighs. Yeah, come on, let's finish this up and get you fed. Something thumps. Owen freezes, wary, eyes narrowing as he stares at the crate. He can't tell if he actually heard something from that direction, or if it was a sound from further away, but something feels off. Something feels wrong, like a prickling of hairs standing up on the back of his neck. Someone walking over the place where he'll die, his dad would have said, and it's a more accurate description than Owen would like. The sound doesn't come again, though, and after a long second, Owen breathes out, glances up at the airlock, and then decides that the tubing needs an outright replacement instead of the patch he was going to attempt. It means he needs to order more parts, put the full repair off for another day, but Staying in this bay any longer doesn't feel like a good idea somehow. When he lets himself out of the bay, toolbox in one hand and Luke wrestled back into his sling, Wolf is there. He's talking with one of the guards in a low voice and stops abruptly when the doors slide open. Owen very deliberately doesn't tell him he's never met anyone worse at subtlety in his life, but he's certainly thinking it. "I'm ordering parts," he says. Keeps it bland by force of will. "They should be in late tomorrow, and I'll get them installed the next day." Wolf isn't looking at him, though. He has his helmet off, and with his face uncovered, Owen can see clearly that his eyes are fixed on Luke, startled, something close to curious. Deliberately, Owen shifts, puts himself between Wolf and Luke so that Luke's hidden from view, and meets Wolf's gaze as it flickers up, as immovable as iron and just as unbending. If the Imperial trooper's got a comment to make about Luke, he's welcome to make it to Owen's face. But Owen's not going to budge. There's a pause, and then Wolf frowns faintly. His gaze sweeps over Owen like he's finally registering him as a person, and he takes a precise step back. "You take your kid to work with you?" he asks, one brow rising. "You think I have a babysitter?" Owen counters. In the sling, Luke giggles, leans forward over Owen's shoulder as best he can, and reaches for Wolf with both hands. He makes a demanding noise, but he's beaming, and Wolf stares like he's frozen solid. For a long, breathless second, Owen has no idea how he's going to react, what he's going to do. Something in Wolf's face shifts, changes, softens. The severe slant of his mouth twists into something rueful, with a strange undertone of relief, and he steps forward, reaches out. Owen doesn't move as Wolf offers Luke a hand in a heavy gauntlet, careful like Luke is going to break just from that. "You're just about the size of a cadet when they pull them out of a growth tube," he says, amused. Luke laughs, tugging at his gauntlet, and Wolf carefully strips it off, offers his bare hand instead. Luke takes that even more happily, pulls it close to inspect it, and Owen watches Wolf's mismatched eyes sweep over Luke, almost desperate underneath the edge of regret. "The size of a cadet," Owen thinks and breathes out. He's likely talking about kids who are made into soldiers. "You deal with a lot of cadets?" he asks. Not quite a test, but maybe the thought is there. Wolf doesn't seem to catch it. All of his attention is on Luke. "Before the war, we'd all do shifts in the nursery," he says, and it's rough in his throat. "Human contact for the babies. It was mandatory." It might have been mandatory, but Owen gets the feeling Wolf didn't mind it so much. He huffs, and Wolf's an Imperial soldier. He's a clone soldier. He's a good half of what Owen's been running from all these weeks, but carefully, he reaches back, pulls Luke up and out. Luke comes with a laugh, already reaching, and Owen gets one half-second of deep amusement at the panic that flashes across Wolf's face as he drops Luke right into Wolf's grip. "Mind the fins," he says gruffly. "He's half Naboo." Luke makes a loud, gleeful sound, thumping his palms against Wolf's plain white armor. He reaches up, and Wolf's military cut is a lot shorter than Owen's scraggy hair. Doesn't leave a lot of room for grabbing, but Luke grabs at an ear instead, pulls himself up. Wolf makes a sound of alarm, quickly throttled, and shifts his grip to brace Luke better, but he's making no effort to hand the kid back, Owen thinks, raising a brow. "Fins, huh?" Wolf says, and glances down at them as they flip. "Never seen a Naboo in tadpole stage. That tail looks too big for you, kid." Luke laughs, lets Wolf detach him from his ear without protest, and goes for the pauldron instead. Wolf lets him, watching him, and Owen folds his arms over his chest and watches Wolf in return, studying his expression. "You've been on human contact duty since you deployed?" he asks. Wolf breathes out, doesn't look up. "No," he says curtly. "War's over." "Is it?" Owen asks, and Wolf barks a laugh that doesn't have anything to do with humor. "That's what the admirals tell me," he says, and shifts Luke, hands him back. Owen takes him, settles him back in the sling, and then glances up to meet Wolf's eyes. There's something burning there, something vicious and angry with that same desperation laid thick across the top, and Owen doesn't need to be a soldier himself to know it's dangerous. Commander, a trooper says, as a pair approach up the hall with quick steps. Wolf turns to meet them, and Owen takes the opening, grabbing his toolkit and slipping away, back towards the maintenance areas. He'll order the parts and then head home to sleep, and then he won't have to think about Imperial troopers for at least another full rotation. There's a commotion outside the port when Owen heads into work 2 days later, big enough that security is all headed there, and he passes clone troopers hustling towards the noise. Whatever it is seems to be contained, though, and Owen gives it one wary glance before he puts his head down and gets to work. There are no troopers stationed outside the cargo bay when he arrives with the parts, and Owen casts a careful look up and down the hall, but lets himself in. "Leave the crate alone," he tells Luke, settling him on his robe near the wall. Luke burbles at him almost a word and rolls over onto his back, watching Owen with big blue eyes as Owen unpacks his tools. It makes Owen huff, and he pokes Luke in the stomach, catches his hands as he grabs, and smiles a little at the emphatic slap of his tail. "Yeah, yeah, just listen to me this time, all right?" Luke takes the stuffed toy he's presented with gravely and promptly sticks its leg in his mouth. "Yeah," Owen says on a sigh he doesn't quite mean. "That's what I thought." Luke seems mostly content, though, so Owen climbs up the ladder to finish the replacement, cleaning the battered old system as he goes. There are no alarms going off, no sounds of a commotion getting close, so he's willing to assume the situation is dealt with. The quiet's nice, too, and he settles into a rhythm of it, the ease. A thump, loud and echoing, and Luke laughs. With a sigh, Owen pulls his upper body out of the unit, turns, stops, because the lock on the crate is flashing wildly, like it's suddenly gone haywire. Luke doesn't seem to notice. He's on his belly near the edge of the crate, banging his palms against the metal, and Owen's never seen him so intent before, so focused. He bangs at it, and something thumps back, and Owen leaps down, but he already knows it's too late. "Luke," he says sharply, just as the door slides open. There isn't even a second to breathe. A body in plastoid armor hits Owen with the force of a battering ram, throws him up against the wall with a snarl. He throws a punch, slams an elbow into covered ribs, kicks out. The cold edge of a vibroblade settles against his jugular and he freezes. Wolf's missing his helmet, and his eyes are as cold as the blade fixed on Owen's with a fury that's only barely contained. "Sinker," he says sharply, "get the kid." Owen's eyes narrow, but he doesn't move as the other troopers spread out across the room. "I was finishing the repairs," he says curtly, and Wolf makes a sound of vicious amusement. "Then why the hell were you trying to slice the cargo?" he demands. "Looking for an easy score, or are you ISB? "I'm a handyman," Owen says, sharp, "and if you touch my kid, we're gonna have problems." Owen doesn't look impressed. "Boost," he says, and there's a sound of acknowledgement. "No idea what he did, sir," the trooper next to the crate says, a frown on his face. "Something..." Luke makes a loud noise of protest, almost a wail, as Sinker leans down to grab him. He bangs the metal desperately, insistently, and yowls when Sinker pulls him away. Another thump sounds from inside the crate, and every single trooper in the room freezes. "Sir, that was..." Sinker starts, and his voice cracks. Wolf's eyes are wide, startled, and Owen can see something rising in his face. Hope and disbelief and that same sort of desperation. The vibroblade wavers, dips, and his breath shakes. He turns, but Owen is quicker, shoves past him to grab for Luke. Luke comes eagerly, grabbing him with one hand as he reaches for the crate, and Owen's tools go sliding across the room to bang into the far wall as a dropped helmet rolls in the opposite direction. The controls spark, flash brightly, and go out with a crackle, and something clicks. One side of the crate swings out in a rush of released air, and a four-fingered hand catches the edge. A body pulls itself out of the space, and a Keldor man staggers out into the bay, clearly injured, his rebreather askew, dressed in familiar brown robes over tan. His gaze goes straight to Luke, though, and he pauses there, staring. Delighted, Luke burbles, reaches for him with both hands. "Mine," he says, and it's the first word Owen's heard from him, clear and meaningful. And he catches a breath, tries desperately to think of a way to get himself and Luke and a carking Jedi out of the middle of a knot of Imperial troopers. "Oh dear," the Jedi says, low and warm. He takes another slightly unsteady step, and Owen steps forward automatically, catches his elbow, and holds him up as he reaches for Luke. "Are you the reason I'm awake, little one? I thought I heard you calling." Wolf's breath rasps, shudders out of him. "General," he says, ragged, and the knife clatters to the floor. He grabs the Jedi's other arm, holding him up as he offers his claws to Luke, and the Jedi looks up at him, pauses. "Wolf," he says, like he's just realizing, hesitates, looking around the bay at the frozen troopers, and then smiles, eyes crinkling behind his goggles. "Jag, did he make it?" Wolf makes a sound of pain, disbelief, and his hands close tight around the Jedi's arm. "He shot you," Wolf says, ragged. "He shot you out of the carking sky, General. He didn't feel like himself," the Jedi says, like that's the end of matters. "None of you did." He turns his attention back to Luke, wiggling his claws, and then glances up at Owen. "Your son is very strong in the Force," he says. "Nephew," Owen corrects, and pauses, looks from the clones to the Jedi, and then says, "I guess they're not smuggling sentience, then?" "Only with the best of intentions, I presume," the Jedi says easily, and chuckles when Luke tugs hard on his hand. "I was asleep, I believe." "In a coma," Wolf corrects harshly. "You were in a coma. Jag and I barely got you out of there before..." He breaks off, and Owen glances up at him, meets dark eyes full of anger and grief. "You wouldn't wake up."
"Then I believe I have quite a lot to thank you for,"
the Jedi tells Luke. Warm. He inclines his head to Owen and says, "Jedi Master Plo Koon at your service." "Owen Lars," Owen says gruffly and pauses. "Wolf and his men rescued a Jedi, are hiding him. That doesn't mean it's safe, but it's sure as hell something. And this is Luke," he says finally, as Luke glances up at him and smiles. Owen smiles back just a little. "Luke Skywalker." The sharp sound of Sinker's inhale is too loud in the quiet bay. "Half Naboo," Wolf says, eyes narrowed, as he looks from Luke to Owen. "Senator Amidala, that half?"
"Anakin was very fond of her,"
Plo observes, and he reaches out, picks Luke up.
"You're going to be just as strong as your father, aren't you, child? But you're a happy little thing, hmm?"
Luke burbles, grabbing for his robes, and Plo chuckles. Not like Obi-Wan, Owen thinks. Obi-Wan's caught up in seeing Luke as a piece of Anakin, a way to fix whatever mistakes he made. There's none of that in Plo's warm gaze, and it eases the knot in Owen's chest just a little. "Are you trying to get him to safety?" he asks Wolf, who nods curtly. "Waiting for a contact at the base to assign us a patrol near Wild Space," he says. "Then we'll take the ship and disappear. There's no place in the Empire that's safe for a Jedi." He pauses, then says ruefully, "Lot easier now that the General is awake. I thought we'd have to drag a Bacta tank along with us." Plo chuckles, clicking his claws together for Luke, who seizes them to inspect the delicate claw covers he's wearing.
"I assume you have a pilot lined up," he says to Wolf.
Wolf huffs, halfway too embarrassed. "Jag," he admits, and Plo smiles.
"My brave wolf pack," he says fondly. You made it through. Wolf closes his eyes like he can't even look at Plo for a moment longer. We're chipped, he says. Flat, furious. Mine malfunctions and I got the others out of the boys, but... Plo's breath is quiet, full of grief. Yes, he agrees. But... Gently, he lifts Luke up, studies his face. Tired of your tail, are you? He asks lightly, and reaches up, skimming his fingers over Luke's temple. With a shiver of scales and feather fins, the tail splits, reforms. Luke crows as his legs reform, and Owen can't help the rush of relief that escapes him as he reaches for his nephew. Criff, he says, and Luke kicks his feet, making noises of delight. Been a long few months like that. Plo chuckles. I've known a few Naboo over the years, he says. The change is rather tricky at first, I'm afraid, but it's simple enough for a Jedi to influence. Wolf hesitates for a moment, then glances at Owen. If you're trying to hide Skywalker's son, he says, wild space might not be a bad idea. That an invitation? Owen asks, raising a brow, but he can't deny how his heartbeat kicks up a little at the offer. Getting out of the Empire entirely, and not to a quasi-occupied world like Tatooine, would fix a hell of a lot of Owen's problems. Especially if Plo can train the kid and keep him from getting stuck in his Naboo form. Yeah, Wolf says bluntly, and holds his gaze. That desperation. Protectiveness, Owen thinks. A desperation to keep things safe. Away from the Empire, even though he's surrounded by it on all sides. It makes him think about Wolf holding Luke, and his words about the baby clones, and the care he'd showed, the tired sort of wonder. Sounds like a better plan than mine, he says, and Wolf snorts. We're not out of the Empire yet, he answers, but... For the first time in a while... Owen feels like there's a straight path forward out of danger, for himself and Luke both. He'll take it. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic and would like to leave feedback, you're more than welcome to. If you'd like to leave feedback for me, you can find the podfic post wherever you found the podfic post to begin with. And if you'd like to leave feedback for the author, you can find a link to the text post in that podfic post. Thanks for listening. Reader's notes. Small note about Owen thinking space is cold. It reminds me so, so dearly about all of the people where I live. So I live in a place that gets pretty cold in winter, which is putting it mildly. And every time I see people who are not from around here, who are from like from places where it's quite a bit warmer all year round, and they experience fall, which, I mean, I think technically it's fall, still fall. I certainly think of November as still fall. Every time they experience sort of September, October, November, where I am, they bring out just like we hit 0 degrees Celsius and they are bundled up. Like, we're talking just absolutely parkas, everything. And it always makes me chuckle a little bit because, I mean, absolutely for them, it's like super, super cold. But it's going to get so much worse. It's going to get so, so much worse. And so when Owen was like, it's so cold all the time in space, I'm like, oh, buddy. Oh, buddy. Makes me feel really bad for Luke on Hoth in the movies.